Good morning, church family.
Good morning.
So over the summer, we've been doing these series of character studies, individual snapshots. We focus in on a biblical character, and we try to bring out some admirable characteristic for us to focus on. And I thought maybe it would be a good time to review the past characters that we've done. Now, some of you, maybe you weren't here. Maybe some of you forgot what the characters we studied were or what the attribute was. Or some of you may know, you just might be too shy to say it out loud. But that's okay. You know, we're about grace here in the church. So there's forgiveness for that. But the very first character we learned about, his name starts with a J. Who do we learn about? And what is John's characteristic? What does John embody for us? Loved. He's the beloved apostle, and he tells us about love. It's a great way to start. Then we talked about Paul. Paul wrote most of the books in the New Testament. And what was Paul's characteristic? What leads Paul? Who leads Paul? The Spirit. Paul is Spirit-led. That was the characteristic we focused in on Paul. And then we talked about Mary, and there's a thousand Marys in the New Testament, Mary of Bethany. And Mary's characteristic also has to do with her spirit. What makes Mary someone admirable we should study? She's free-spirited. And last week we learned about Amos, and what's Amos all concerned about? Starts with a J. Justice, right? Martin Luther King would quote from Amos. We actually read the passage last week, "Let justice roll down like waters and righteousness like a mighty stream." So I bet some of you can guess what character we're going to talk about today. We've read two scriptures about her. Anybody want to guess?
Ruth.
We're going to study Ruth today. Ruth is one of the only two ladies that has a book of the Bible named after her. We thought when we were doing the study, there's lots of good ladies in the Bible to study. We should definitely do some of those. Now, the book of Ruth, it's really short. You can read through it really easily. You're going to get kind of like an overview right here, but I would encourage you read it. It's only four chapters. And if this makes it, this might make it more attractive for you to read it, make it less attractive for you to read it, but I think it kind of reads like a romance story. If you find like romantic comedies or love stories being some of your favorite things, you'll find some of those elements, I think, very appealing in Ruth. Now, and there's only a few characters you need to be aware of in the book of Ruth. Even though the book is called Ruth, the kind of big arc that it follows is Ruth's mother-in-law, Naomi. Kind of like the big overarching plot of the book is how Naomi, whose name means sweet, her life has become bitter. Her life has become empty. And it's how God uses faithful people to bring Naomi from bitterness back to sweetness, from emptiness to fill her life with wonderful things again. So Naomi's the mother-in-law of Ruth, and Ruth is one of those faithful people. And Boaz, the boy she eventually gets with, is another person that's faithful there. Those are the three main characters you have to think about, with a couple other ones that we're going to explain here. So it's very simple, it's very short, it's very accessible. I encourage you to read it. And Ruth and Boaz, like many love stories, they have their differences, right? You know, sometimes, like, in some ways, they couldn't be further apart. You know, Ruth, she's a foreigner. She's a Moabite, right? And she's poor. She's at the bottom of the social ladder. Whereas Boaz, he's a man of standing. He's an Israelite. He's like an established guy. But, oh, they have their differences. They do have this thing in common. What they have in common is that they are committed to godly kindness on behalf of Naomi, this woman that they love. And so we get to see God working through these people to help Naomi. Let me give you a brief synopsis about how Ruth works. So Naomi and her husband, things are going bad in Israel. So Naomi and her husband go to Moab. They think they're going to have better luck there. But Naomi runs into some rotten luck there because her husband dies. Uh-oh, that's not good. But she's got two sons. She's like, okay, well, I still got my two boys. My family will continue to live on through them, right? And they marry my Moabite women. One of which is Ruth, right? However, then both of Naomi's sons die. And now this is where she goes from sweet to bitter, to empty, right? It seems like she's hopeless. Her family has no chance to move to live on. They hear that, hey, there's food in Bethlehem. Why don't we go back to Bethlehem? Ruth comes back with Naomi to Bethlehem. And chapter 2 is about Ruth looking out for her depressed mother-in-law, Naomi. Ladies, can you imagine clinging to your mother-in-law and trying to provide for her? And then that's when she meets Boaz, the dream boat, right? Who's real nice to Ruth. Chapter 3, Ruth, on behalf of Naomi, basically proposes to Boaz, and chapter 4 is Boaz doing what he has to do for them to get together. That's the basic arc of the love story. That's the big picture, but we're going to look at some of the details to bring out Ruth's characteristic that I want to tease out here. Here's how the story begins. In the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land, so a man from Bethlehem in Judah, together with his wife and two sons, went to live for a while in the country of Moab. That's Naomi and her family. They died. That's what happens in that little ellipsis right there, that dot, dot, dot. But when Naomi heard in Moab that the Lord had come to the aid of his people by providing food for them, she and her daughter-in-laws prepared to return home from there. Now, so here's where Ruth enters the story. The characteristic that we're going to focus on for Ruth, that we're going to tease out from the little details of what she does here, is this. Ruth is faithful. Ruth is faithful. Ruth is committed to do what God desires, and that's what faithfulness is. She's committed to do what God desires. And about Ruth's commitment, I want to bring up this detail. Her commitment of Ruth and Boaz actually goes above and beyond what would be expected of her. Now, when I use the word commitment to describe faithfulness, let me make a distinction here. When I say commitment, I don't mean like just an obligation, right? Because we know what it's like to kind of begrudgingly follow through of our commitment if we're obligated to do it, right? It's like when someone invites you to, like, I don't know, a party or some kind of function, you're like, ooh, that sounds really fun, but I have a prior commitment. I don't really want to do it, but I'm going to do it because I'm obliged to. That's not the kind of commitment I'm talking about here. Ruth is so faithful, she loves Naomi so much, she will go above and beyond what's required of her, okay? And we get to see how far Ruth is willing to go compared to how her sister-in-law acts. So let's look at this. So they're about to go back to Bethlehem. Naomi said, "Return home, my daughters. Why would you come with me? Am I going to have any more sons who could become your husbands? Return home, my daughters. I am too old to have another husband. Even if I thought there was still hope for me, even if I had a husband tonight and then gave birth to sons, would you wait until they grew up? Would you remain unmarried for them? No, my daughters, it is more bitter for me than for you because the Lord has turned against me." So we see here just how hopeless Naomi feels, right? She's like, listen, girls, your husbands, my sons, they're dead. That tie between us, that's no longer there. So you are no longer obligated to stick around. Why don't you go back to your folks' places in Moab? You'll probably have a better chance there of finding a husband and making a good life at yourself. At this, they wept out loud again. Then Orpah, by the way, this is one of the Moabite women that married one of Naomi's sons. This is where Oprah Winfrey gets her name. They rearranged the spelling of this. But yes. Then Orpah kissed her mother-in-law goodbye, but Ruth clung to her. See, you see the difference? Orpah's like, you know what? She has a point. I'm gonna go the other way. I'm not obligated to follow her, but Ruth is going to cling to her. "Look," said Naomi, "your sister-in-law is going back to her people and her gods. Go back with her." But Ruth replied, "Don't urge me to leave you or turn back from you. Where you go, I will go. Where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people, and your God will be my God." That's probably the most famous passage from the book of Ruth. "Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord deal with me, be it ever so severely, if even death separates you and me." And when Naomi realized that Ruth was determined to go with her, she stopped urging her. We see here, Ruth is committed. She's so committed, but she's committed to go above and beyond what she's obligated to do. She's so committed that even the hopeless Naomi is convinced. She was like, I got to stop trying to push this girl away because I'm not going to convince her because she's so committed. All right. So they go back to Bethlehem and Ruth takes it upon herself to provide for Naomi. She's like, let me go see if I can find a field to find us some food. Right. She happens upon Boaz's field, right? He's the dream boat of the story, you could say. Okay, let's look at Boaz's introduction and how it shows his commitment to go above and beyond. Verse 1, chapter 4. Just then Boaz arrived from Bethlehem and greeted the harvesters. "The Lord be with you," he said. "The Lord bless you," they answered. So that's how Boaz is introduced, right? He's introduced like, this is a good guy. He's blessing everybody in the name of the Lord. That's a good first impression. But aha! those are his own people, right? But when Boaz sees that there's this foreigner, Ruth, a Moabite, working in his fields, how is he going to react? So Boaz asked the overseer of his harvesters, who does that young woman belong to? And the answer is, she doesn't belong to us. She's an outsider. She's a foreigner, right? But how is Boaz going to treat, how kind is he going to be to this outsider? He's going to be very kind indeed. You see, God wanted Israel to be accommodating to foreigners during the harvest time. He said, hey, don't pick all the crops. Leave some of it behind for foreigners and aliens you're led so that they can have something to eat too. Let them gather some things, the leftovers in your field, so they can survive. That's a way to be faithful to God. And so Boaz proves here he's going to be faithful. But look how his commitment goes above and beyond that minimal requirement of just letting this foreigner take the leftovers of his field. It continues. So he tells Ruth, he was like, hey, not only can you pick in my field, you can kind of, you can have some of the cream of the crop. We're going to keep you safe and you can have more than your fill, essentially, is what he says to her. And this is what Ruth says to his kind word. She says, may I continue to find favor in your eyes, my lord? She said, you have put me at ease by speaking kindly to your servant, though I do not have the standing of one of your servants. Even though you're not obligated to treat me like a servant, you're treating me just as kind as you would one of your servants. Look how Boaz goes above and beyond in verse 14. At mealtime, Boaz said to her, come over here, have some bread and dip it in wine vinegar. When she sat down with the harvesters, he offered her some roasted grain, and she ate all she wanted and even had some left over. You know, they say in economics there's no such thing as a free lunch. Well, apparently that's not the case on Boaz's farm, right? Boaz is so generous. Not only is he content to have her have the leftovers, He's gonna feed her as she does it too. He's gonna give her more than what she sees. That's extra kindness above and beyond. That's generosity. And it's not just what he does to her face, speaking kindly and inviting her to lunch. He does things behind the scenes, behind her back, that Ruth doesn't know about to be kind to her. It says this in verse 15. As she got up to glean, so she doesn't know about this, Boaz gave orders to her men, let her gather among the sheaves and don't reprimand her. Even pull out some stalks for her from the bundles and leave them for her to pick up. Don't rebuke her, right? So Boaz is essentially saying, hey, you know, I know foreigners, they're only supposed to get the leftovers, but you know what? Let's let her go past the boundaries of the leftovers. Let's pull out some extra stuff for her. Or like, you know, ordinarily, if a foreigner did that, they would get in trouble. They could be reprimanded. He's like, don't reprimand her when she crosses that boundary. Isn't that really sweet of Boaz? He's being kind to her face to face, but he's also being kind with her behind the scenes. So Ruth has this big haul from Boaz's farm, and she goes back, shares it with Naomi. This is verse 21. Then Ruth the Moabite says, he's like, Naomi, you're not going to believe all the good things that happened to me today. He even said this. He went above and beyond this way. Stay with my workers until they finished harvesting all my grain, right? So it's not just that Ruth got one lucky day from Boaz. You know, some people might say, you know, Boaz, you were really kind to that foreigner that one day. Wow, you've been as generous as you will, you know, you've done all the generosity you need to do for the whole year. Make a big write-off on your taxes for what you did, right? Boaz isn't content just to be kind for this one day. He invites Ruth to participate with them all the way throughout the harvest. He essentially gives her a job, a way to survive, a way for her and Naomi to get by. They can live off this. That's how generous and kind Boaz is. He goes so above and beyond. Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, it'll be good for you, my daughter, to go with the women who work for him, because in someone else's field, you might have been harmed. It shows you the difference about how lucky Ruth was to meet Boaz. It's God's providence, right? If Ruth had ended up in somebody else's field who wasn't as kind, who wasn't as faithful, who wasn't as committed to being generous like the Lord calls them to be, it could have been very unfortunate to Ruth, but Ruth essentially wins the lottery by being led to Boaz's place, right? It underscores all this. Naomi has more comments about this. Her mother-in-law asked her, where did you glean to get aid? Where did you work? Blessed be the man who took notice of you. The Lord bless him. He has not stopped showing kindness to the living and the dead. She knows who Boaz is. Now, when she says he's not stopped showing kindness to the living and the dead, she's like, this guy is so nice. He's not just kind to the living, the people in his circle that he knows about. Like, you know, they moved away. Naomi and her crew moved away from Bethlehem. You know, who knows what happened to them? They might as well be dead to Boaz. But Boaz is going to be generous to even those people outside of the living, his closest circle. She added, "This man is our close relative. He is one of our guardian redeemers." Naomi is related to Boaz in some way. Boaz has some responsibility to her. But notice she says he is one of our guardian redeemers. He's not the only one. See, there was somebody else in Naomi's circles, concentric circles of family, who was closer to her than Boaz, who would have had a greater responsibility to help out Naomi. So this is Boaz speaking, and Boaz is aware of this. He says, "Although it is true that I am a guardian redeemer of our family, there is another who is more closely related than I, someone who has a greater obligation to help you than I do. Stay here for the night, and in the morning, if he wants to do his duty as your guardian redeemer, good, let him redeem you. If he is not willing, as surely as the Lord lives, I will do it." So Boaz is saying, hey, someone else is more obligated than I am, but there's a question here. Is he going to follow through on his duty? If not, Boaz is going to pick up the slack because Boaz is just that kind of guy that goes above and beyond. Boaz goes, meets this guardian redeemer in chapter 4. He says, and the guardian redeemer is unnamed, so I'm sorry I have to say that over and over again. We don't know what his name is. So Boaz says, listen, you're the guardian redeemer. Naomi's come back from Moab, and she has this land, okay? The idea is Naomi's so desolate and poor, she has to sell this land that once belonged to her and her family, right? And as the guardian redeemer, you've got first dibs to buy it from her, right? It's a real estate investment. And you guys know how real estate is. Like, it's a costly investment, but it can, the chances for it to pay off are real big. The guardian redeemer hears this, and he says, oh, yeah, I'll do that, right? But then Boaz springs this twist on him. Chapter 4, verse 5, Boaz says, "On the day you buy the land from Naomi, you also acquire Ruth the Moabite, the foreigner, the outsider, the dead man's widow, in order to maintain the name of the dead with his property." So essentially, it's not just that he can buy this land. The guardian redeemer would also be obligated to marry Ruth, provide her an heir that's going to keep the family name of Naomi alive, and he would get the inheritance of this land that he just bought, right? At this, the guardian redeemer said, "I cannot redeem it because I might endanger my own estate. You redeem it yourself. I cannot do it." Maybe he's thinking, he's like, oh no, if I marry this girl and have an heir with her, and he's my only surviving heir, he won't only just get this piece of property I'm thinking of buying, he might get everything I own. All my inheritance might go to this other guy's family. So this guy is not committed enough as the guardian redeemer to risk everything to help these people, Naomi and Ruth, right? He'd be willing to put down an investment for a lucrative piece of real estate, right? But he's not willing to risk the danger of losing his own estate. Now, the risk is the same for Boaz, but Boaz is willing to do that because Boaz goes above and beyond. Just as we see with the difference between Ruth and Orpah, I want to say Oprah. Orpah goes just as far as she's required to, as does this guardian redeemer. Ruth and Boaz, they're the kind of people that are so faithful that they're going to go above and beyond what's required of them, above and beyond their commitments. Now, what this reminds me of, it reminds me of what Jesus talks about here in Matthew 5. He describes it like this. If anyone wants to sue you and take your shirt, hand over your coat as well. If anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go with them too. Give to the one who asks you and do not turn away from the one who wants to borrow from you, right? It's not just help out those who are in your circle and help you. Like even your enemies, turn the other cheek. Give generously to those who ask of you. Go the extra mile. You guys have heard that phrase before, like going the extra mile. And the way we tend to use the phrase going the extra mile is we tend to say someone who like does their job really well has gone the extra mile. Like the most common example is like a server. Your server was really attentive. They've gone the extra mile, so you're going to give them a nice tip, right? But when Jesus says go the extra mile, when someone asks you to go 1 mile, go with them too, it's talking about going above and beyond what would be required of you. It would be more like a server not only was really attentive to you when you're at the restaurant, but the server like gives you a ride home after your meal, right? It's like a whole other category of generosity, right? And I think Boaz and Ruth demonstrate that kind of commitment. They are willing to go above and beyond because they're so faithful. And so, that's the first point. These last two points are going to be much shorter, I promise. God rewards that kind of faithfulness. Now, I have here, God rewards our commitment to do what he desires. You see, we can be committed to a lot of things, folks. We could be committed to the wrong things. How do you know that what you're committed to, is it a good thing? Well, if we're committed to a good thing that God desires, that's one working definition of faithfulness. And both Ruth and Boaz are convinced that what they are doing is what God desires. You know how I know that? It's because they invoke God's name when they commit to it. Remember this part? When Ruth promises not to leave Naomi, she says, your God will be my God, right? So she's leaving the gods of the Moabites and taking on Naomi's God, the one true God. She says, may the Lord deal with me, be it ever so severely, if even death separates you from me. She's not only taking on a commitment, she's taking on Naomi's God. And she says, you know, I think this is something God wants. I think God will hold me accountable to this commitment. This is what Boaz says. When he says, okay, I'm going to help you girls out, he says, as surely as the Lord lives, I will do it. If you're committed to something that God desires, that is what we call faithfulness, and God rewards faithfulness. So how does God reward the faithfulness of Boaz and Ruth? Let's start with Boaz. We see this in verse 11. This is actually chapter 4, verse 11. I mislabeled that. The elders and all the people of the gate, they see Boaz helping out these ladies, and they say, may the Lord make the woman who is coming into your home like Rachel and Leah, who together built up the family of Israel. May you have standing and be famous in Bethlehem, where your offspring be like that of Perez and Tamar, blah, 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 blah. Basically, what they're saying is like, hey, Boaz, you're doing a great thing here. You're going above and beyond. You're going the extra mile. You ought to be famous because you're so generous. More so than that, this new wife that you're taking on, may she be like some of the best wives in Israelite history, right? That's essentially what they're saying. That's how Boaz is rewarded for his faithfulness. So let's look at how God rewards some of Ruth's faithfulness. We see this throughout the book. So when Boaz is super kind to Ruth, he's like, hey, you can be safe here. You can stay in my field as long as you want. You can have as much as you want, essentially. She says, you know, why have I found such favor to you? I'm an outsider. I'm a foreigner. You don't have this obligation to me. Boaz replies, I have been told all about what you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband, how you left your father and mother. You did all these things for Naomi. Ruth is essentially saying, why me? Why should I benefit from this? And Boaz says, it's because you went above and beyond for Naomi. God's going to use me to reward that faithfulness. He continues, may the Lord repay you for what you've done, Ruth. May you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge. You guys know, like, mama birds will sometimes protect, like, their baby birds underneath their wings. That's the kind of image he's doing. Even Jesus says something similar to this. He says, oh, Jerusalem, I wish to gather you like a mother hen gathers her chicks, right? So that's what Boaz wishes to her, right? And that little line when he says, may you find shelter under the wings of the Lord, it's going to come up later in the next chapter. He says, Boaz is essentially saying to Ruth, may God reward you for this like a bird covering you with its wings. This is what Ruth does, and I think it's pretty clever. It's kind of like a romance story. Ruth, on behalf of Naomi, goes when Boaz is flying high from the harvest festival and everything, and essentially does an old-timey marriage proposal to him. But what she says, I am your servant Ruth, she said, spread the corner of your garment over me since you are the guardian redeemer of our family. So this proposal, she's asking, hey, will you take me on and take care of me? And she kind of reminds Boaz, you know, you wished that I would be covered figuratively by the wings of God. And that can happen if you can cover me figuratively with your garment, if you're faithful to do what God requires. And that is exactly how the Lord rewards him. Boaz is agreeable. Boaz is faithful. The kindness you showed me, he says, is greater than that which you showed earlier. You have not run after the younger men, whether richer or poorer. He's saying you've done great kindness, just like you've, to me, like you've done for Naomi. And he says this in verse 11, I will do for you all that you ask. All the people of my town know that you are a woman of noble character. Now that phrase right there, woman of noble character, many of you ladies are familiar with Proverbs 31, where it describes a woman of noble character. Rachel used to work for 31, which was based on that. A lot of ladies have like Bible studies and stuff. It's like, we should be ladies of noble character. And it's described in Proverbs 31. But here is the only other part in Scripture that has that phrase, a woman of noble character. Ruth is explicitly labeled as a picture in the Bible of a woman of noble character. And it's so essentially, her being a woman of noble character, that's her being faithful to God, and God rewards her for that. Okay, so we see Ruth and Boaz, they both go above and beyond their commitments. They're committing to what God wants, so they're faithful, and God rewards faithfulness. This is the final point I'm going to make. God works through our faithfulness to bless others. This is the other consequence of being faithful. First, let's look at the big picture of how God uses the faithfulness to bless others. So this very first verse that we read, kind of the context, the book of Ruth is set during the time of Judges, right? And if you read the book of Judges, it's a really kind of gnarly part in Israel's history. The Israelites are doing a lot of like debauchery and like terrible stuff, and they often reap negative consequences for it, things like famine, right? Naomi and her family, they leave the promised land and they go to one of Judah's enemies, Moab, right? They're committed to surviving, but they're not so committed to what God's called them to. They're not going to stay in the promised land. And that doesn't work out well for them, that move. But the good news in Ruth is that Lord, in the book of Ruth, the Lord provides for his people, possibly because they've started acting righteously again. Everybody in this story acts mostly righteous. Even the people that only meet their obligations, it's a righteous thing to do just to meet those obligations. Even the people who are doing the minimal of what God asks. Now, I want you to read between the lines to see how God is working in this story. It's not often explicit, and oftentimes it's behind the scenes. I think this is pretty cool. From chapter 2. So, it just so happens Naomi has a relative on her husband's side. And not only that, he's a man of standing. This is Boaz that they're talking about. So Naomi thinks she's hopeless, but she comes back, and there's this guy. It's really good that he's a relative. And look how the scripture puts it. As it turns out, of all the fields that Ruth could go to work in, it's that guy. It's the one good relative that Naomi has. And look at this. It's not just that she finds the one field that's Boaz's. Verse 4, it says, just as she started harvesting there, but just then Boaz arrives, right? So think about that. Not only does Ruth pick the one field that belongs to Boaz, she also shows up just as Boaz does. Is that a coincidence? I think not. Okay. Ruth is in the right place at the right time. This is God's providence that we're talking about. God is setting up an opportunity for Boaz here. So the question is, God sets you up for that opportunity. Are you going to take it? Boaz does not waste that opportunity because he's faithful to God. It also says this, sometimes it says it explicitly in the book of Ruth. Boaz took Ruth and she became his wife. He made love to her, and the Lord enabled her to conceive, and she gave birth. So it essentially says, you know, God's working in this marriage. God enabled her to conceive. God works in Ruth, the outsider, by finding a husband for her, finding a way in for her, finding a place among these people that originally were not hers. And God blesses her with a son. We also see, so that's how God affects the big picture, how God rewards Ruth and Boaz. He also blesses Naomi through the faithfulness of Ruth and Boaz. You see, they have this baby, and the women say to Naomi, praise be to the Lord, who this day has not left you without a guardian redeemer. May he become famous throughout Israel. He will renew your life and sustain you in your old age, for your daughter-in-law, who loves you and who is better than seven sons, has given birth. So essentially they're saying, you know, God should be praised here because he's working in this whole situation. He gave you a faithful guardian redeemer in Boaz. He's also given you a faithful daughter-in-law. This Ruth is so faithful, she's better than seven sons. That's a big statement. And this son that you have, this grandson that you have, may he renew you and restore your hope, Naomi. May you go from bitter to sweet, empty to full again. You see, Naomi has been redeemed by God working through these faithful servants, Ruth and Boaz. And about this part about her grandson becoming famous, her grandson does become quite famous. Naomi took the child in her arms and cared for him. The women living there said, "Naomi has a son," and they named him Obed. He was the father of Jesse, the father of David. You know, that David, like one of the most famous people in the entire Old Testament, one of the most famous people in the history of Israel. This is the grandchild that she gets is the grandfather of David. And who is David? David is God's faithful servant who God used to redeem Israel. Here's the even bigger twist, if we even zoom out even further. Who do we know comes from David? Jesus. Jesus, who was faithful to redeem the entire world. What I want you to see, folks, is that God worked through Ruth and Boaz's faithfulness to bring Jesus into the world to save it. Their faithfulness is one link in that chain. That's why being faithful can be so rewarding, because you get to see how God will work through our faithfulness. So this is the final point. This is the final slide, the application of our lesson. What I really want you to take away from this lesson is to think through your commitments. Ask yourself, what are you committed to, if anything? Some of us are really good at not committing to things, right? But whatever it is that you do commit to, do you think your commitments honor God? Are you faithful to what God desires? And if so, be excited. Because if you're faithful to what God desires, God will reward you and work through that faithfulness. Perhaps a little smaller application for our particular church family. I mean, here at Gateway, we're all about bringing people closer to Jesus. Right now, during this time, let's make the most of the opportunities that God has given us, especially this summer. Let's be intentional about worshiping together, learning and growing together, praying for each other and fellowshipping with each other. Let's be like Ruth and Boaz, going above and beyond and being faithful.